Lovely day, sunny, breezy, and seasonal. Today, 80 degrees Kenosha, 47 Racine. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8.
And we welcome you to the Wednesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I am excited to be, first of all, sitting across the table from a faculty colleague of mine from Carthage College, namely Seth Weidman, who is now Associate Athletic Director at Carthage. And Seth is also very, very interested in and concerned about water safety, and has worked tirelessly on this. We are going to be having Seth Weidman talking about some of the ongoing concerns about how we can keep people safe at the Lake Michigan lakefront and wherever they are playing and swimming and enjoying the water. We also have with us another guest via the telephone, namely David Benjamin's region called the Great Lakes Surf Rescue Project. And we are glad that he can join us as well to talk about some of the important work. Great. We look forward to having you talking with us in just a little bit that make his work in that field with the swimming and diving program so much fun.
Yeah, so thanks so much for having me again, Greg. It's always a pleasure to be here at the morning show. You know, with Carthage Swim and Dive, I think it's a great example of what swimming is. Kind of, you know, Dave and I will probably get to this a little bit later in the hour, but you know, swimming kind of has these what I think is at least three distinct levels, and you know, at the first level, it's very much water safety. It's anti-drowning. At the next level, it's recreation, it's fitness, and at the highest level, or the third level, is essentially that highest level of competitive swimming. And so I think Carthage Swim and Dive is a great, what a lot of those kids get at that basin, which then leads to the kind of racing that we get to do. And so we're fortunate to have a nice long NCAA swimming season. It's technically a winter season, but we start as early as September. We go into March, so it kind of feels never ending in that way. But another great season. Both teams, men's and women's, finished third in the conference, which has become a really competitive conference at the top, which is really fun. So very much looking forward to next year and beyond.
Excellent. Very, very good. Seth, remind me, is there anything in particular that really galvanized your interest in water safety? I'm trying to remember if something occurred in your own life or something that really kind of sparked this passion that you have.
Yeah, I don't have. I'm sure we'll get to that really sparked his interest and his passion. You know, I certainly had a couple of moments as a kid that I remember that are kind of seared in my head. That, you know, as only maybe a 4 year old, you know, you don't have a lot of memories, but I do have memories of both enjoying the water, but also getting into a little bit of trouble and you know, having a parent. I think the one particular memory at a hotel pool is my dad having to scoop me up, you know, because I thought I was a little too ready to swim in the deep end. Then I actually actually was. But for me, it was religion. And then as I decided to be a coach full time after my undergrad, I think I had the good fortune of landing at a place, a really special place in Evanston, Illinois. So the YWCA down in Evanston, and it's relatively rare for YWCAs to have youth athletics the way that YMCAs do. They're very much different organizations. YWCA is pretty much fully an advocacy organization, eliminating racism, empowering women. But they happened to have this pool that they built in the 1970s, and they offered swim lessons. And my former boss and good friend and mentor, Pete Carraher, he had built out a really amazing swim program by the time I came around. And, it taught about 1,200 kids a week to swim. It had over 600 kids on the swim team. So it was a really, really large, kind of the largest or second largest aquatics program in the state of Illinois. And a huge part of that was reaching, especially underserved populations that don't always get the opportunity to swim. And that really, I think, sparked my passion in both the water safety element for everybody, but also trying to do outreach to folks that don't always have that history of swimming and water safety in their families and in their past.
And of course, swimming is one of the healthiest, best things you can do for your body. And a lot of times people who struggle with just about any other kind of exercise for various reasons can get into the water, and the water is their friend, and all kinds of good things happen in terms of health and well-being, to say nothing of fun. And of course, keeping people safe is a really essential part of that. Well, David Benjamin, director of the Great Lakes Surf Rescue Project, we want to bring you into our conversation, and we again thank you for joining us. Your friend Seth Weidman says you have an interesting origin story, and we'd love to hear it.
So my whole life I've been swimming. I grew up with swim lessons at my local public pool as well as YMCA, and been swimming in Lake Michigan every summer now for over 54 years, and even lived in California near Huntington Beach, and had a lot of experience. I started surfing Lake Michigan, and I had this overconfidence that I know how to swim, and I have this flotation device, this surfboard that, I was really, really felt invincible, and I spent most of my time surfing, overestimating my abilities without even knowing I was doing that. But the long story short is December 26, 2010, I was winter surfing in Portage, Indiana, and the ice flow was starting to move into the lineup, and it started seeming a little sketchy, and I figured I'd catch one more wave and get out of there. Not really paying attention, but just kind of glance over my shoulder, and there's this big wave coming, and I committed late, and it fell on me, pushing me to the bottom and flushing my wetsuit with like 32 degree cold water, going to the bottom, and I just instantly panicked in that wipeout. It was probably for me the worst wipeout I had, but what was most important about that is I didn't feel my surfboard leash tugging on my ankle. The wipeout ripped that Velcro right off my ankle. So now I'm realizing I'm without my surfboard leash. And I, moment of panic, try and get back up to the surface. And as soon as I do, I could see my surfboard is getting tossed into the rock wall pier. And then another wave is closing out and pushing me under. And, most people don't know that panic is the first stage of drowning. And when you're in the moment of panic, it's, sheer terror, and you're exhausting yourself just trying to get out of the water. And so, within, half a minute, I'm wiped out and given up and pretty much write myself off. And when I stop struggling to get to the surface, I'm wearing a wetsuit, which is 6 millimeters thick with, 7 millimeter boots and gloves and a hood. It had some buoyancy that got me back up to the surface. As long as I wasn't fighting to get to the surface, I was able to, but I had that buoyancy. And then the next thing was, is I was in a structural current, which is moving, parallel to the structure, to the pier, moving out. And I'm realizing I don't want to go out. I want to get outer where the waves are pushing towards the shore. Now, at this point, I'm probably over 300 yards from the shoreline. But I knew that that current on the structure was just going further out. So essentially, I just floated back to shore, catching waves to body surf along the way to get out of the water. It was after happening in the Great Lakes and hearing stories from other surfers of rescuing people, or they're at, you know, situations where people drown, that I just connected with a fire marshal from East Lansing, Michigan, who's also a water safety expert, and I organized one water safety presentation. The idea was to teach surfers how to use their surfboards as a rescue device, and then we've now done over 1,150 Lake Michigan or Great Lakes water safety presentations across the Great Lakes region, and we do the majority of our school presentations in schools now.
Fantastic. You know, your story is such an important one, and one of them is that, I mean, it's one thing when somebody who barely knows how to swim and is not a trained swimmer whatsoever or not much of an athlete or whatever, you know, wanders into the water, gets into a bad situation. Somebody young and strong and athletically trained and great in the water, and yet even for somebody with all those pluses, in the, I was going to say the right situation, the wrong situation, cautionary tale that this can happen to anybody, including somebody who for
swim experience survey and then a safety pop quiz. And the findings is that well over 95% of the audience will say that they know how to swim, and less than 5% will actually know a drowning survival strategy. And what we find is that people associate knowing how to swim as water safety when knowing how to swim is just knowing how to swim. They don't relate to swimming as an endurance sport. I mean, if we kind of relate to everyone knows how to run and we understand, it doesn't mean you could run a marathon. But people don't understand that knowing how to swim doesn't mean you could survive the marathon of a drowning incident unless you have a strategy and have a little bit of water safety knowledge of the beach hazards, et cetera. So that's one of the biggest challenges that we have. We do want everyone to know how to swim. It's very important to know how to swim. It greatly increases the possibility of surviving a drowning incident. But if you don't understand that panic is the first stage of drowning, and that if you get into that panic throw, you're going to submerge in less than 1 minute. And that's the average. An active drowning person will submerge in less than 1 minute because they get caught up in that panic. So you need, what we advocate is you roll over on your back. So you flip, float, and follow. You float to keep your head above water, calm yourself down from the panic and conserve your energy, and then follow a safe path out of the water. So you're going to have to float first, continue breathing. Otherwise, you're not going to have the opportunity for an exit strategy.
By the way, not to make you relive this traumatic experience, it sounds like for you, part of what saved your life was, in a sense, the moment you, in effect, gave up. That is, exactly. Understandably, you were thrashing around and desperate, and at some point, it sounds like you sort of decided, well, this is it, and gave up the thrashing, and that was part of what allowed you to resurface and survive this.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, back in the 60s, there was a professor from New York who was also a lifeguard, Frank Pia, and he termed the phrase the instinctive drowning response. Essentially, humans instinctively know how to drown. We all do the same thing when we get in the moment. And the signs of drowning is typically facing shore or the closest exit out of the water, your mouth is at water level, your head is tilted back, your body's vertical, and you're doing this climbing the ladder motion. And those are the true signs of drowning. And most people think drowning looks like, you know, yelling and waving when a person drowning can't do that. So essentially what we want you to do is, you know, the opposite. And if we relate it to other safety, you know, efforts like fire safety, if your clothes catch on fire, you stop, drop, and roll. Because your instinct is to run away from the flames, which actually fuel the flames and make it worse and increase the burn. So you have to do the opposite of your instinct with your clothes caught on fire. And this is like the same thing. An ordered task helps alleviate the panic because you know what to do in the situation for greater survival rate.
So that really underscores the importance of training. That is, people can only be taught to sort of fight their own instincts. I mean, if one is left to only your instincts, what sort of feels like the right thing to do in the moment, you're almost certainly going to do the matter of water safety.
Exactly. And that's why there's a startling statistic that 66% of all drowning victims actually knew how to swim and were good swimmers. It's just, one, they may have panicked, or two, They may have been just out farther than they had the endurance to swim back. So if you can float, we would say is the most important component of any water skill is the ability to float. It's not your ability to swim, you know, 500 or 1,000 yards. It's your ability to stay at the surface and continue breathing long enough for either self-rescue or for professional rescue to arrive. Because, you know, especially in the big lake, if you submerge in less than a minute and someone's calling 911, it's going to take first responders 3 or 4 minutes to get there. And then they're going to have to start their search if they're approved to get in the water. And unfortunately, 10 minutes of submersion is pretty much the cutoff point for the, any chance of survivability. So it's very, very important to know that. So that's why it's very important to swim at a lifeguarded beach that are properly trained. They know their beach. They know the hazards. They're trained with open water rescue techniques. So, I mean, they are the eyes on the water and the first responders. They need to recognize it before a person is getting in trouble so that they have the time to get to them when they get to the active drowning stage and provide them flotation and assist them out of the water.
For those of you just joining us, we are observing International Water Safety Day, and his friend David Benjamin joining us via telephone, director of an advocacy organization called the Great Lakes Surf Rescue Project. By the way, Seth, when did you and David Benjamin first meet? How is it that the two of you know each other?
Yeah, so we here in Kenosha, with our Safety Around Water Coalition here in town, have had the good fortune of being connected with Dave and his Great Lakes Surf Rescue Project essentially since our inception. So, gosh, this was 2017 or 2018 was the year that we kicked off that coalition, spearheaded by the Kenosha YMCA, with partnerships all over town, you know, including the city of Kenosha and many other organizations. And right away, I'm not sure actually, because I wasn't there that very first few months. I'm not sure if we reached out to Dave or if Dave found us, but since Dave has just been an immense source of knowledge and supporter of our efforts here locally. We have our very much our localized water safety concerns and efforts, and a lot of those are pool driven when it comes to trying to educate as far as swimming and some safety around water education that can happen even on dry land, our police officers and fire do a good job of educating many of our Kenosha Unified School District students. But a big component of water safety on lakefront communities is this huge lake that we have just to the east of our city. And, there's no one else in the country, really no one else in the world that has the type of project that Dave does that is so highly focused on education everywhere from being in schools, as he said, to educating, boots on the ground, or I guess I should say feet in the sand, lifeguards, which he's actually doing later this week. He's going to be up in Racine, just to the north of us, helping with their open water beachfront lifeguard training. And, to have an advocacy organization in our region here that is so focused on that has been, truly, it's been inspiring, I think, to those of us on this Safety Around Water Coalition here in town. And the fact that he checks in with us every month is myself helped organize it at the Washington Park swimming pool a couple of years ago. We've done it now 2 years in a row. And again, he brought his group and his education there, but connecting with their parents and their families and is really what we're aiming to do at this point.
Fantastic. David Benjamin, it'd be great to hear a little more about the Great Lakes Surf Rescue Project, exactly when you were organized, and a little bit about the scope of what you do. I mean, from what I have read, you are, although, of course, focused to a great extent on Lake Michigan, you're really talking about the entire Great Lakes region, and it sounds like the depth and breadth of what you do is pretty impressive.
So everything that we do overlaps and complements each other. So we have several key areas of operations. First off, we keep track of all the drownings that happen in the Great Lakes. Then we teach water safety. We work with family and friends of drowning victims after their tragedy if they want to get involved with water safety or just have an understanding of what, unfortunately, their loved one went through the drowning process. We train lifeguards and first responders for open water rescue. And then we do a lot of work with the media. And then what we do, something we call special projects, where it is a wide range of things. So being part of the Kenosha Safety Around Water Coalition is something that we do in many cities. So we've done this, you know, up near Sheboygan, as well as Port Washington. We do outreach in Milwaukee with their ambassador program, but like Gary, Indiana, Michigan City, Indiana, and then in Michigan, several cities. And they're all at different stages of development. Some of them have been around, you know, for many years. Some are just organizing and reshaping. But, you know, the biggest challenge that we see is there's really no funding for any of this. We do need to understand that drowning is actually a public health issue, and it does not get funded like a public health issue. It pretty much gets treated as a recreation issue. And when drownings happen, oftentimes the general public and sometimes the media and in some places even officials might be blaming the victim for drowning. And that's unfortunately one part of not understanding the drowning process and understanding water safety. So that's pretty much everything we do. But like other special projects, you know, we advocated for public rescue equipment in Chicago for over 4 years. And finally, some people we were working with said, hey, let's just make it a law and they'll have to comply. And so it's a state law in Illinois that all public access points and piers must have public rescue equipment like life rings. That bill just passed in Indiana and goes into effect July 1st. We're working on a similar bill coming up in Michigan, plus there's also an education bill in Michigan. So we got a little more involved with the legislative process, primarily due to people that we work with who are also volunteering that may have some experience with this to move it forward. You know, in Indiana, there's a woman, Evelyn Hernandez, that she survived the drowning incident in 2012 and contacted us, you know, shortly after that incident where she survived, but her boyfriend perished. But 2 years ago, she, with us, created the Lake Michigan Waterfront Safety Initiative for Indiana, and the four tiers was public rescue equipment, updated beach hazard signage, public education, and more lifeguards. Those are the four tiers that, you know, the pillars that we're working with. And so now the public rescue equipment is a law, and we go on to the next phases. But again, it takes up all of your time and your energy. I have like three or four, you know, Zoom meetings a week. That technology has really helped out because in the past, you know, prior to the pandemic, a lot of this we had to do face-to-face. We had to go to city council meetings. We had to go, you know, to the cities to have these meetings somewhere. And now we can Zoom. It makes it so much easier. So that's kind of a huge overview of everything that we do.
It's impressive all that you managed to do. Can you just take a moment to talk about what I'm sure are sobering statistics in terms of the number of drownings that occur in the Great Lakes region? And if you're able, maybe also focus specifically on Lake Michigan. I mean, what are we talking about in terms of the extent of this problem?
So we began tracking all drownings that happened in the Great Lakes back to 2010. And as of end of last year, 2023, there's been 1,240 Great Lakes drownings.
Wow.
We've got about 15 so far that we're tracking this year, but this time of year, it's hard to get all the information because oftentimes it might just be, you know, body recovered from this location. They don't have the identity. They're not revealing whether it's male or female. And unfortunately, this time of year, some people may have gone missing last year, and now they're starting to wash up, unfortunately, because of the warmer waters. And so that's, you know, a thing we have to work with. But again, 1,240 Great Lakes drownings since 2010. On average, almost half of all Great Lakes drownings happen in Lake Michigan. And then half of Lake Michigan drownings happen in the south end of Lake Michigan. So the Illinois-Wisconsin border to northwest Indiana to the Indiana-Wisconsin or Indiana-Michigan border, is the deadliest spot on the Great Lakes. And largely a key reason why is because it's a high population density living around the water, as well as tourist destination. Lifeguards are actually pretty good on the south end of Lake Michigan. Chicago has lifeguards, and then the northern communities of Chicago also have lifeguards. Indiana, maybe half the beaches have lifeguards. And then Michigan is unfortunately horrible with lifeguards. They have like two beaches, New Buffalo and St. Joseph. Then you got to go about 250 miles before you may find the next lifeguard on Lake Michigan in Michigan. So when we're looking at water safety, the big picture, we need to look at layers of protection and put it into like three categories. It's called the Safer 3 Foundation. So safer swimmers, safer water, and safer response. So safer swimmers is knowing how to swim and having had water safety education. Safer water would be having updated beach hazard signage, public rescue equipment, having lifeguards, and then safer response is, you know, having lifeguards that are working directly with first responders, you know, Department of Natural Resources, their local fire department, water rescue, working seamlessly together. And so it's kind of hit or miss in some of the lifeguards, but they may have a beach patrol that's kind of, you know, a liaison and kind of filling that gap. But that's just kind of like the big picture of how we need to approach this, because oftentimes, especially in the media, they're saying, what's the one thing that people need to know? And I say, yeah, there's about 10 of them. These are the 10 need to know, because it's not just one silver bullet that's going to solve this. It's everything overlapping.
And simplification of problems that require comprehensive and sometimes complex solutions. And so shame on us for not telling this story as fully as we need to. And, of course, that's why a conversation like this is really important. David Benjamin, I'm curious, when you look at the work of Seth Weidman and what is happening, for instance, here with the beaches of Kenosha, do we see similar things like that happening throughout the Great Lakes? Or is this fairly exceptional in terms of this concern being taken this seriously?
No, they can also, a lot of other communities get on board. What I think we're finally starting to see happen, we're calling it the bandwagon effect, where water safety is going to be the coolest thing that everyone wants to get involved with right now. Especially after, when we look at drowning, we do need to understand this is like a worldwide epidemic. I mean, even the World Health Organization said that drowning continues to be a neglected public health issue. And so it is starting to get traction around the world, which, you know, essentially helps us here. But yeah, Kenosha, I'd say, has been one of the early pioneers, and we're working with about 10 other groups similar to what Kenosha does for Great Lakes water safety in their cities. And they've also started public education in the schools. And what we believe should be the most important aspect for water safety is a national water safety school curriculum. We should have water safety in every single school in every single state, and we don't. We believe that a water safety school curriculum would be the fastest approach to reach the largest audience in the shortest amount of time that would have the maximum impact. And if we look at schools today, standard, you know, public safety issues are fires, tornadoes, school shooters, and even earthquakes. We do earthquake drills in many states, including Illinois and Indiana, and there hasn't been a fatal earthquake in my lifetime in Illinois or Indiana, but it gets a higher priority over water safety. But when we look at the, you know, annual statistics, it's likely that more school-aged children would die drowning each year in the United States than by fires, tornadoes, school shooters, and earthquakes all combined. So why is it? And then let me take a step back, because you know, showed some guilt on yourself. You said shame on the media for not covering this. What we need to understand about water safety is water safety is not common sense, but people say it's for the average local politician or the state politician. We have to educate everybody across the board so they understand we barely have any funding to do this, and the limited funding that we do get generally comes from family members of drowning victims who already gone through the greatest tragedy that they can, and we can't bring back their child, but they don't.
Seth Weidman mentioned that you are on your way to Racine on the 17th and 18th to engage in some training. Describe what that training is going to be, what it's going to entail, kind of what it's going to look like.
It's going to be this Saturday, May 18th, in Racine. We will be doing classroom sessions only this Saturday. But it's going to be about 4 hours of water safety presentations, lifeguard training, first aid, you know, how to properly rescue people. In our presentations, we want everyone to become a water safety advocate. So there you have a true understanding. But we will go through the research and statistics of drownings. We will go through the signs of drowning. We'll go through foot, float, follow drowning survival strategy, because even lifeguards need to know this strategy. You know, they may get, you know, separated from their equipment on a rescue. We'll talk about basic water safety for the rules of their beach, and so that they can educate the public on the rules of their beach and basic water safety, and then water rescue. And water rescue can be a variety of entry techniques, as well as swimming techniques to get to the drowning person. And then there's like rescue tubes, rescue cans, rescue surfboards. And then there's also rescues without any flotation device, which is the most dangerous thing. We highly recommend it. You know, always keep your rescue equipment, your flotation device attached to you. But in the event that there's a separation, they still need to know how to make a safe rescue, because people don't truly understand that a drowning person, again, is in the moment of panic. And even if it's your child or your brother or sister, if they're drowning and you're trying to help them, they're in the moment of panic and they will climb all over you. So as a lifeguard, you have to know how to navigate that, essentially control their body so that you're on their back, they're not on your back, and then get them to breathe and calm down and then navigate exiting the water. So it's open water surf lifeguard in service training this May 18th in Racine, Wisconsin. And then in addition to that, the sheriff's department, as well as the lifeguard crew, they have these Emily devices, which is a remote control that's about like a 4 foot long torpedo type of thing. It's remote controlled, and it can go about 25 miles per hour, and you can send this flotation device out in the water to get to a drowning person and provide them flotation. So we'll be doing a demonstration of that as well.
You know, you are providing such a service for us on several levels today, but one of them is helping us better understand what a lifeguard does. I mean, and for most of us, the only thing we ever really see a lifeguard do is blow his or her whistle from their chair and, you know, yell at somebody to stop doing something. But I mean, thankfully, most of us never see a lifeguard engage in the thing that is, in a sense, their namesake activity, saving someone's life in the water. But it happens more often than we realize, and it typically does not happen where we're in a position to see it. And you're really underscoring the challenge of it. Seth, I know that you remember the interview that I did with a young man 20 plus years ago, who rescued someone on the Kenosha lakefront in the water, describing it like almost moment by moment. And I know that's something you have in more ways than one, and for both the victim and the would-be rescuer.
Absolutely. I had that experience that I think I spoke about very briefly here last year spot. And from what I can tell, this is anecdotal still, because we don't have all the data, but from what I can tell, that's the leading source of drowning deaths in internally dangerous. And I had this experience, it was about 2 years ago, of walking through Pennoyer Park, which is right where that the outlet of the Pike River is. Right at the band shell there, it actually happened to be a Kenosha Pops evening. So Greg Berg, right here sitting across the desk from me, was actually listening to him both MC and sing at that event. And as I'm walking with my wife Emily, we start to recognize that there's two kids that are in the water, and you know they're mostly just waiting, but it, you know, they're getting a little too close to that outlet current for my liking. But, you know, didn't think much of it because they did seem like, you know, just from their splashing around, they seemed comfortable in the water. They did have families and parents that were near them. But within the course of only about a couple of minutes, as they started to go further in and it became apparent that they were actually swimming, it also became apparent that they were being pulled out from the outlet current that is there. And, you know, within probably 20 seconds, they were about 20 yards out and in real trouble. And I did what, you know, David Benjamin just talked about as being probably the most dangerous and least safe version of being a lifeguard. And, you know, fortunately I am a lifeguard and have been since I was 15 years old. But, you know, my wife, she yelled, you know, as I started to run and toss my phone and my wallet to go in, and she was asking, should she get the life ring, which we fortunately do have on our heavy use beaches now and on our pier. But, you know, the way that the river had flowed through the beach that year and gone quite a ways south, the life ring was so far away that I didn't think there was enough time for that. So while she was, I was the one who decided that would take too long to run and get that. And I went in without a flotation device. And the hardest thing I've ever done was to try to get one of those kids back to shore. And fortunately, it ended well. The good fortune that we had that day is that there was another beachgoer there who came in along with me, and he was so smart over, and he used that we had before going in after the kids was to convince the adults, the parents of that group, to not go in. It was very apparent that they were not swimmers, and to think, you know, the tragedy that would have happened had we not just happened to be there. I think about it all the time. And 2 weeks later, a tragedy happened where I and nobody else was there, and unfortunately, the 5-year-old boy, his name was Samuel, he drowned and did not make it, and that was one of the other victims of that particular spot. So, you know, that's my neighborhood. I live right there. It's one of the reasons why I'm really passionate about this work is that is a really dangerous spot, particularly dangerous spot along our lakefront. It's a very, like David was saying, it is a complex issue at the highest level, and even this very specific situation, this one challenge. And so we've gone above and beyond with extra signage and extra communication about that. But if we leave anything here today locally, it's to really be mindful of the dangers of that one particular Pike River outlet. Mm.
It bears repeating again and again, of course. David Benjamin, we're going to let you go in about a minute or so. I want to give you just an opportunity for any last quick thoughts that you might have for our listeners.
Just one water safety tip that most people aren't going to think of when they're going to the beach. Generally, when people are looking at the weather reports, they're looking for, is it going to be hot? Is it going to be sunny? And they're not paying attention to which way the wind is blowing. Sounds a little weird, right? Hey, which way is the wind blowing today when I go to the beach? But we want people to understand that the wind direction and the wind speed will have impacts on types of dangerous currents they may encounter. So to simplify it, because, you know, if you're in Gary, Indiana, you're looking north. If you're in Kenosha, you're looking to the east. In Michigan, you're looking west. When you get to the beach and you're standing and you're looking at the water, is the wind coming onshore? Is it coming side shore at one angle or another, or is it blowing offshore? Because that'll have an impact. Now, if the winds are blowing heavy onshore, you will have some probably wave activity depending on the water temperatures, which you'll have traditional rip currents pulling directly away from shore. But a longshore current, if the wind is hitting the beach at an angle, it flows parallel to shore. So if you've ever gone to the beach, you put down your towel, you get in the water, and then 10 minutes later, you're 20 yards down the beach. That was a longshore current. Not a big hazard for adult-sized people, but for young children, it could take them to water over their head, even parallel to shore. These longshore currents can also feed into rip currents. They could also feed into the Pike River outlet current. They could feed into the structural current along the pier. So a structural current is a current that flows parallel to the structure. So we can have several types of dangerous currents working in concert together, and they're all driven by the wind. And then one that's most deceptive is when the wind is blowing offshore. So the wind's blowing from your back out to open water. Anything that floats can go far and fast offshore. So kids on inflatables like rafts or a volleyball that's blowing out. Unfortunately, we have fatalities every year. People caught in offshore winds that were swimming out after their kid's toy, and they just didn't have the effort to swim back, and they never caught the toy. You know, so just understanding there's several types of dangerous currents one may encounter, and the wind direction is really the culprit.
Well, we appreciate that and every other bit of great advice that you have given for us today. David Benjamin, director of the Great Lake Surf Rescue Project. You have a very colorful and helpful website that people should seek out to get even more information. And we want to remind people that David Benjamin will be in Racine, actually, this Saturday the 18th, giving lifeguard training and continuing to do this really important work. David Benjamin, we really appreciate you joining us today on The Morning Show. Thank you very, very much, and thank you for all the good work that you are doing on behalf of this really important issue.
Thank you very much. I greatly appreciate the time today.
You're very welcome. Thanks again. Bye-bye. And Seth Weidman, I want to thank you for the wonderful idea of issuing this invitation to David Benjamin. We have literally 1 minute for anything you want to say as a closing thought.
Yeah, I would just say, you know, as much as we talked about it being so multifaceted and how, you know, learning how to swim and knowing how to swim and even being a strong swimmer isn't of this puzzle, is to get people safe in the water. And all of these places I'm going to name right now do a great job of actually teaching in water instruction, but also safety around water elements as well. So I would put a plug in for KUSD. They do the only free, and I'll repeat that, they are free swim lessons in the community. And you can search that on your on the internet. I would also plug the Kenosha YMCA, Diver Dan, the Recplex, Swimtastic Swim School out on Green Bay, our own Carthage College. It's a little more seasonal, but there are swim lesson opportunities there. And the beautiful brand new RUSD, Racine Unified School District swimming facility up in Racine. So any and all of those places are places that you could reach out and learn how to swim.
Very good. Seth Weidman, Associate Athletic Director at Carthage College and one of the coaches of the swimming and diving teams there. Thank you for your good work on behalf of this really important issue. And thanks for being my morning show guest today. It's always great to talk with you.
Thank you, Greg.
Tomorrow on The Morning Show, we will be, among other things, talking about the Supreme Court and its long legacy when it comes to voter rights.